Jerusalem.
Welcome to Jerusalem Next. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown. In this week's news, the Egyptian parliament voted to hand off two Red Sea islands to Saudi Arabia. Wednesday and Thursday were days of violence on both coasts of the United States. President Trump's plans to help Russia ease back into the Western New World Order were thwarted by the U.S. Senate this week, and President Trump is now facing an Oval Office investigation of his dealings with Russia during the 2016 election campaign. These stories and more coming up. The Senate voted Wednesday, 97-2, to pass a measure that would toughen sanctions on Russia and, in the Republicans' first significant blow to President Donald Trump's agenda, prevent the White House from unilaterally easing or removing the sanctions imposed by Barack Obama in 2014 and 2016. The measure would require the president to inform Congress before taking any action that could alter U.S. foreign policy with regard to the Russian Federation, including changes to the sanctions. The bill still needs to pass the House and be signed by Trump to become law, but it will likely annoy the White House, which began considering easing or lifting sanctions against Russia right after Trump was inaugurated. This raised red flags among former Obama administrators at the State Department, who asked Congress to preempt any attempts by Trump to alter the sanctions. A senior White House official inquired again in March, asking the State Department to assess whether sanctions on Russia were harming U.S. interests and whether lifting them would increase Russia's oil production and therefore help the U.S. economy. This new measure could hamper ongoing talks between the Trump administration and the Kremlin to improve their relationship and facilitate the return of Russian diplomatic compounds to the U.S. that were seized by Obama last year. White House officials said the bill, in its current form, poses a number of risks to the administration's ability to conduct foreign policy. The White House is still reviewing the legislation and would not declare a position until it is amended in the House and lands on Trump's desk. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says he wants flexibility and maneuverability as he tries to improve ties with Russia. U.S. lawmakers, however, are going in another direction. Tillerson suggested that there may be other diplomatic options to the current sanctions. U.S.-Russia relations are at a new low, and Tillerson said he is trying to stabilize that. Now, here is an insight. Congress has fallen into Yahweh's hand. That perverse body of legislators is unaware how their stubbornness with Russia will one day cause a direct war. The U.S. and Russia have never fought a direct war. They have either been nominal allies, as in World War II, or have fought each other by proxy, as they did in Vietnam, and are now doing in Syria and Afghanistan. Statements made in the press seem to indicate that Congress has already decided that Trump is guilty as charged by Obama and his cronies working behind the scenes to continue the overthrow of the new administration. It is no secret that the Republican politicians dislike Trump as much as the Democrats. To destroy Trump, they are willing to use Russia in their proxy war, so blinded are they that they cannot see the danger in doing that. Their probe of President Trump for election tampering in collusion with Russia has proven nothing, so now the Hill will investigate him and his team for obstruction of justice. Senior intelligence officials will be interviewed on whether Trump tried to stop an inquiry into his firing of Michael Flynn, former National Security Advisor, and the firing of former FBI chief James Comey, who led one of several inquiries into Russia's activities. The decision by Mr. Robert Mueller to investigate President Trump's own conduct is a major turning point in this investigation, which until recently focused only on the Russians' involvement during the 2016 election. The obstruction of justice investigation actually began just a few days after President Trump fired Mr. Comey on May 9th. Comey testified to Congress last week that Trump had pressured him to drop the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The charges of election tampering, which have yet to be proven, are not enough to satisfy Trump's political enemies, so in further drumbeats against Trump, there could also be an investigation into possible money laundering among Trump associates. A former senior official told the New York Times this week that any collusion between the Trump team and Russian officials would have involved a payoff, and that there may have been attempts to hide the route of the payments being used in offshore banking. How has the president responded to all this? He tweeted early on Thursday morning saying they made up a phony collusion with the Russian story, found zero proof, so now they go for obstruction of justice on the phony story. Nice. The continued investigation is being blamed on secret intelligence information leaked by five individuals. Speculation is that it was an FBI leak, possibly in retaliation for the firing of James Comey, or members of the CIA. Insight. My speculation, which I will discuss in detail later, is that the Obama administration is a puppeteer pulling strings behind the scenes to destroy President Trump and get him impeached. Trump has repeatedly railed against leaks from the FBI, saying this is the important story, not alleged collusion with Russia. For months, President Trump has been obsessed with clearing his name in relation to the ongoing investigation into Russia's meddling in the 2016 election and potential collusion with members of his campaign. Trump has repeatedly asked FBI Director Comey whether he was personally under investigation. On three occasions, Comey said he was not, and Trump wasn't under investigation prior to Comey's firing on May 9th. But he is now. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, National Security Agents Director Mike Rogers, and former NSA Deputy Director Richard Leggett are being interviewed again this week by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Another insight. Robert Mueller's team likely have a conflict of interest and bias against President Trump. Aside from possible alliance with Barack Obama, individuals hired as part of the Justice Department investigation team have made thousands of dollars in donations to Democratic political campaigns. Three of the five lawyers gave overwhelmingly to Democrats, totaling more than $53,000 since 1988, and more than half of those donations came from just one lawyer, James Quarles, who works at the same firm where Mueller worked, Wilmer Hale. Quarles gave nearly $33,000 to political campaigns, including presidential candidates Michael Dukakis, Al Gore, John Kerry, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton. Quarles also gave more than $10,000 to help Democrats running for the House, and another $10,000 to candidates running for Senate seats, including money to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Ironically, Quarles is also the only lawyer among Mueller's team who donated to Republicans, giving $2,500 to Representative Jason Chaffetz in 2015 and $250 to then-Senator George Allen back in 2005. What might Barack Obama have to do with this? President Donald Trump's allegations that Barack Obama illegally tapped his phones during the 2016 campaign may be a clue about the twists and turns in the investigations of Trump's election team, his administration, and himself. Every time an investigation turns up nothing, a new angle is offered and a new investigation is undertaken. Could it be that Barack Obama is directing the show behind the scenes? Trump's allegations that Obama bugged his phones has merit. Obama bugged everyone via the National Security Administration, NSA, American citizens, Angela Merkel, Benjamin Netanyahu, officials at the World Trade Organization, Italian diplomats, and the European Union, economic officials. Even UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was bugged by Obama. Information obtained by the NSA was then shared with the FBI and CIA, who, ironically, are fingered in the most recent leak of intelligence information. The Daily Wire recently called Obama the wiretapper-in-chief in their article on March 6, 2017. Even though Obama and his little workers in the compound are not in the news right now, whoever believes Obama is not behind President Trump's persecution didn't pay attention from 2009 to 2017. Members of both parties have said they have seen no evidence to back up Trump's allegations about Obama, yet there they are being watched incidentally. Or is it coincidentally? Obama, working behind the scenes, was responsible for the ouster of Michael Flynn. How? The effort to remove him from the Trump administration included a small task force of Obama loyalists who deluged media outlets with stories aimed at eroding Flynn's credibility. This is according to multiple sources recently in the press. Trump took the bait and fired him, falling directly into the manipulations of the master puppeteer. The operation primarily focused on discrediting Flynn, an opponent of the Iran nuclear deal, in order to handicap the Trump administration's efforts to disclose secret details of the nuclear deal with Iran that had long been hidden by the Obama administration. Insiders familiar with the anti-Flynn campaign told the Free Beacon recently that these Obama loyalists plotted in the months before Trump's inauguration to establish a set of roadblocks before Trump's national security team, which includes several prominent opponents of Obama's diplomacy with Iran. Let's not forget also that Obama began investigating Trump before the end of the 2016 elections and that he kept staffers around after the inauguration. Valerie Jarrett moved into the Obama home. There is little doubt about Obama's agenda to overthrow Trump. Thus, the ongoing investigation, which began last summer. Radio host Mark Levin used his recent Thursday evening show to outline the known steps taken by Barack Obama's administration in its last months to undermine Donald Trump's presidential campaign and later his new administration. Levin called Obama's effort police state tactics and suggested that Obama's actions, rather than conspiracy theories about alleged Russian interference in the presidential election to help Trump, should be the target of congressional investigation. Every illegal act that a man in the Oval Office could perpetrate against Americans was done during the Obama administration. From forcing Americans to purchase a product, Obamacare, to conducting black ops against Americans in the mainland and abroad, Obama did it all. He is likely still stirring the pot to make it difficult for Trump to undo the damage done in the previous 8 years. Now, there are enough allegations made by the former Obama administration, along with Trump's friendly overtures to Russia, to cause an intelligent person to take a second look. The former Obama administration interference with President Donald Trump should not make us decide Trump is innocent of all charges regarding Russia. Trump has his own agenda where Russia is concerned. Do I think Trump was involved with Russia during the election? Yes. Trump did not need Russia's money, but their election tampering would have been very helpful in the effort to bring the two New World Orders back together. Trump is trying to fix the New World Order breach. Russia's agenda likely has nothing to do with the reunification of the two New World Orders. Putin now leads one half of the planet's political elites. He will not give that up, so his agenda likely has to do with destroying the old Western New World Order. The world is pairing off into two major New World Orders now, and it began under Barack Obama. The new northern/eastern New World Order, headed by Russia and Iran, will face off with the old western/southern New World Order, headed by the United States and Saudi Arabia. These two world orders will clash during the Great Tribulation when the second red horse rides out to take peace from the earth. More on that in a minute. Obama created this breach in the global New World Order when he stirred the Ukraine pot and put sanctions on Russia. He thought this would bring down what he said to the press was only a regional power, not a world superpower. Now, Obama is not that stupid, but the press bought his explanation. Obama had an agenda to separate Russia and Iran. With Russia, he created an economic war that he probably thought would keep Putin too busy to care about the Middle East and the big oil boys' grab for control of the Syrian distribution system. But that was only an excuse for why Obama wanted to operate in Syria. Going back to Russia, though, Obama might have thought economic collapse in Russia would cost Putin his power or his life because of discontented Russians. With Syria and Iran, Obama thought he could kill two birds with one stone by doing that Iranian nuclear deal. Now, the first stone Obama wanted to throw was the one that would have killed off the State of Israel. The second stone would have finished off Iran via a U.S.-backed invasion of Iran by ISIS. Obama would have then been Islam's Sunni Messiah, who would have ruled the entire planet from its new caliphate. Thus, Obama was, as I have said many times, not the Antichrist, but his forerunner, the preparer of the way. What he did didn't work. Russia didn't crumble, but a diplomatic mess was created, and Russia was backed into a corner. Once in that corner, Russia and Russia's ally, China, created BRICS: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. These were the nations that were willing to belly up and bankroll the Russian economy to stabilize it. BRICS caused the emergence of an Eastern New World Order that is now dividing the world and rushing us toward the final showdown. The new pair of New World Orders is now evident. North and East, as I've said, Russia, Iran; South and West, Saudi Arabia and the U.S. This dividing line is also the impetus for the white horse of Revelation, which is the book of Daniel's King of the North, to ride out. Like Sunni Obama, who tried to ride out to conquer the Shiites, this new Shiite coalition will triumph. Iran, Syria, Iraq, Hezbollah, and now possibly Pakistan and India, who are backed by Russia, will ride out to conquer the Sunni coalition in the south that is backed by the United States. This will settle the almost 1,400-year-old issue over which sect succeeds Muhammad. But that won't be enough for the power-hungry Eastern New World Order, who will then turn its attention to the Western-led nations. Trump's activities trying to mend this breach will not work. Immediately after conquering the Sunnis, Russia, Iran, China, North Korea, and possibly other nations will attack all Western New World Order nations. Let's go to the book of Revelation, chapter 6, start at verse 1. And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. This is Daniel's king of the north going forth to conquer the Sunnis. Verse 3. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, "Come and see." And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, that they should kill one another. And there was given to him a great sword. So this red horse has the power to take peace from the entire earth. So not only will these two Western and Eastern New World Orders fight each other, but it will cause peace to be taken from the entire earth. In other words, all the nations will be involved in this. The red horse will ride out in quick succession after the Sunnis are conquered by the Shiites. So quickly, in fact, that the whole world will be astonished. Repent and prepare. No one knows the timing of this. It could take a few more years to come to fruition, but we see Yahweh setting the chess pieces right now. Now let's see the rest of this in Revelation 6:5. And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, "Come and see." And I beheld, and a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, "A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. And see that you hurt not the oil and the wine." These are economic factors. Right after the red horse rides out, there will be economic collapse. The economic collapse that everyone is looking for right now, that every September 23rd since the year 2015, every year now we're getting this September 23rd message that there's going to be an economic collapse. Well, there might be, but it'll be regional. But this global economic collapse happens during the Great Tribulation after the red horse takes peace from the earth. Why does that happen? Because the governments are taking money from their entitlement programs and they are using it for weaponry, and they're using it for war. And because there's so much war, there can be no exports and imports. The shipping lanes will be dead. There will be no way to transport food, which brings us to the fourth beast that says, "And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given to him over the fourth part of the earth to kill with sword, with hunger, and with death, and the beasts of the earth." I will be right back after these messages. Sits upon the throne.
Jerusalem, our feet are standing in your...
Welcome back. There are further developments on Friday morning in the uptick in the Syrian war. These are developments that will eventually result in a direct war between the U.S. and Russia, also continuing to upscale U.S. operations in Syria hurts the relationship with Russia that Trump is trying to rescue using the economic carrot, the release of Obama's prior sanctions. Trump is not a military person. He believes that money solves everything, even wars. So he progresses on his path to destroy ISIS, Obama's personally created Islamic army with which he hoped to conquer the world. Trump's desire to destroy ISIS in Syria may be one of the factors driving Obama to continue meddling in White House affairs. The uptick this morning is that the United States has redeployed HIMARS rocket artillery from Jordan to Syria to a U.S. Special Operations Forces base near the Syrian town of Al-Tanf, which is 18 kilometers from the Jordanian border. What we see here now is that the coalition, the Southern Coalition, has put its first foot inside the southern Syrian border from Jordan. Deployment of any foreign weaponry to Syria, especially multiple artillery rocket systems, has to be coordinated with the sovereign state's government, that's the Jordanian government, according to the Russian Defense Ministry statement this morning. So, Russia is looking at this as being coordinated between the United States and Jordan, and these are the leading coalition members of the King of the South. It noted that the range of HIMARS cannot allow for providing support for U.S.-controlled Syrian Democratic Forces operating against Daesh or ISIS in Raqqa. The U.S.-led anti-Daesh coalition, the statement said, has several times already attacked Syrian government forces fighting Daesh near the Jordanian border. It is possible to assume that similar strikes could be continued in the future involving HIMARS from now on. So, what objective is the U.S. pursuing in Syria, and who are the U.S. servicemen fighting there? The statement asked. We'll try to answer that in a minute. This, though, does mark the first time that this weapon system has been deployed inside Syria. The HIMARS will be stationed in the vicinity of the U.S. coalition training base at At-Tarif to support operations there. The long-range battlefield missile represents a large boost in long-range firepower in the 55-kilometer deconfliction zone around the base. We have increased our combat power in that area, U.S. Colonel Ryan Dillon told reporters earlier this month at the Pentagon. He said, "We have increased our presence and our footprint and are prepared for any threat that is presented by the pro-regime forces." While troops at At-Tarif are primarily there to support the fight against ISIS, tensions and conflict have been rising with pro-regime forces in the area. An F-15E Strike Eagle recently shut down an Iranian-made drone after it dropped a dud munition near coalition troops. The HIMARS has been used to support Syrian Democratic Forces in its offenses against ISIS along with conventional artillery before, but from positions in northern Iraq. This move directly into Syria is a response and deterrent to pro-regime forces in and near the zone who have been moving their own artillery in the area. HIMARS is a wheeled multiple-launch rocket system that can fire up to 6 rockets at a time. Depending on the model, the rockets can carry submunitions for area suppression or a single unitary blast warhead. It can also use the Army Tactical Missile System, which is a long-range battlefield missile with a range of over 180 miles. The Russian Defense Ministry this morning has raised concerns about U.S. multiple rocket launchers being deployed at this base in eastern Syria. It said it was not impossible the two HIMARS launchers being set up in Al-Tanf would be used against troops fighting the so-called Islamic State. Syrian and Iranian-backed militiamen had reportedly been moving towards the base located in a sparsely populated desert region. Russia is the Syrian government's main military ally, and the Russian Defense Ministry said it's not impossible that similar attacks on Syrian forces that we have seen since the beginning of June will be continued in the future, but this time using HIMARS. The Syrian government also said this week that it had regained territory in the Al-Tanf area. This is another serious move against the King of the North. We have to wonder just how much longer Russia will tolerate the U.S. and the King of the South's coalition incursion into Syria. There is also another new development that could push the King of the North, the Iranian, Syrian, Iraqi, Hezbollah, and other nations coalition over the edge against Saudi Arabia. Egypt's parliament this week backed President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's decision to transfer two Red Sea islands to Saudi Arabia, a move that defied previous court rulings, which invalidated the move, and risking renewed protests against a treaty opponents have denounced as an erosion of sovereignty. The agreement that redraws maritime borders between the two countries was passed after heated committee debates. Critics accuse el-Sisi, who signed the transfer accord a year ago during King Salman's visit to Cairo, of giving up land in exchange for Saudi aid. The government says the islands, Tiran and Sanafir, have always belonged to Saudi Arabia and that Egypt was merely overseeing their administration. Lawmakers were asked to stand to register their approval. In a sign of the potential trouble that could follow Parliament's decision, security forces clashed with protesters outside the journalist syndicate on Tuesday, arresting some who were rallying against the transfer of the islands. Today is a terrible day for the Egyptian people, one in which the nation has lost part of its land, said lawmaker Haitham al-Hariri. The Supreme Constitutional Court will rule on who has jurisdiction, but has not set a date or even started discussing the issue. It was not immediately clear what the legal situation of the treaty was following Wednesday's vote. A government report advising Parliament on the terms of the agreement said Egypt would keep administrative control over the islands and Egyptians would not need visas to visit them if they were transferred to Saudi Arabia. Insight. Saudi Arabia sees the islands as militarily strategic. The King of the North coalition, which is Iran, Iraq, Syria, Hezbollah, backed by Russia, now has another reason to attack the King of the South coalition, Saudi Arabia and its allies, and Israel, backed by the United States, for control of these islands. Protesting Egyptians see the danger in this move, but whether or not the islands become Saudi Arabia's territory, the King of the North will capture Egypt, per Daniel 11:42-43. The Red Sea Treaty was introduced to Parliament only days after Egypt joined Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain in cutting ties with Qatar. It was a move designed to show loyalty to the Saudi government over any relations it might have with Qatar. As the Qatar crisis continues, Saudi's King Salman is trying to ascertain which way the winds are blowing in his kingdom. Are you with us or with Qatar? Saudi King Salman raised this question during a meeting with Pakistan's Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who had visited the Saudi kingdom for finding a diplomatic solution to the Qatar crisis. The Saudi monarch asked Sharif to take a clear position on Qatar during their meeting in Jeddah on Monday, the Express Tribune reported, citing diplomatic sources. Pakistan has told Saudi Arabia it will not take sides in the brewing diplomatic crisis in the Middle East after Riyadh asked Islamabad, "Are you with us or with Qatar?" the paper said. Pakistan has been treading a careful path since Saudi and other Gulf countries snapped diplomatic ties with Qatar after accusing the oil-rich country of supporting terrorist groups. But Saudi wants Pakistan to side with the kingdom, it said. Insight. Pakistan is moving toward a Russian alliance, but is not ready to make that declaration yet. However, it is clear from statements made by Pakistan's diplomatic sources that Pakistan is not firmly with Saudi Arabia, which is backed by the United States. A continued relationship between Saudi Arabia and Pakistan may be incompatible with the new East and West's agendas. Saudi Arabia would like to have nuclear power Pakistan as an ally because this would allow the kingdom to dump its relationship with Israel. Despite having no official diplomatic relations, Saudi Arabia and Israel do have a common goal, targeting and isolating Iran and ending its support of the Syrian government. Their saber-rattling may become more than just talk as they continue to receive money and arms from the U.S. But if Pakistan allied with Saudi Arabia, its inconvenient relationship with Israel could be ended. The U.S. deal to sell arms to Saudi Arabia is also a spoiler for Israel. One reason for the destruction of end-time Babylon is the damage that nation does to Israel. Could arming Saudi Arabia have something to do with that? Jeremiah 51:49 says, "So Babylon will fall because of the slain of Israel, even as the slain of all the earth have fallen because of Babylon." Pakistan and India's latest treaty with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization signals far eastern winds that could blow across the Middle East. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit is kicking off in Kazakhstan with the admission of India and Pakistan topping the agenda. Russian President Vladimir Putin, who already met Chinese leader Xi Jinping, will take part in the leaders' meeting. Official approval of India's and Pakistan's accession bids will become a key part of the summit. The two Asian powers have long aspired to become full members of the SCO with their membership memoranda signed during the 2016 summit in Uzbekistan. Moscow believes the move will dramatically expand the organization's capacity to influence international affairs. The world is pairing off into two major New World Orders, the Northern Eastern New World Order headed by Russia and Iran will face off with the Western and Southern New World Order headed by the United States and Saudi Arabia. Insight. These two New World Orders will clash during the Great Tribulation when the second Red Horse rides out to take peace from the earth. Revelation 6:2. Then I looked and there was a white horse. Its rider had a bow and a victor's crown had been given to him. He went out as a conqueror to conquer. When the Lamb opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Go." A second horse went out. It was fiery red, and its rider was given permission to take peace away from the earth and to make people slaughter one another. So he was given a large sword. The first horse goes to ride out to settle the question of which sect of Islam has the right to rule the caliphate and bring the earth under submission. The SCO will now include four nuclear powers, Russia, China, India, and Pakistan, not to mention the other member states' economies. These countries are red. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is performing an in-gathering for Esau's people at the same time that Yahweh is beginning to gather the whole house of Jacob to Jerusalem. According to rough estimates, the SCO members combined will comprise around half of the world's population and produce a quarter of the global GDP. The Great Tribulation is a war between Esau and Jacob. It is most interesting that we now see the red Edomite nations becoming half of the global population. The other half is Jacob's Israelite kingdom. And we now see two new world orders, Northern and Eastern, Russia and Iran, the Red New World Order, and the Southern and Western, Saudi Arabia and the United States, New World Order. These two world orders will fight for global primacy and to return imperialism, the worship of one king, to the earth during the Great Tribulation. What we see happening now is preparation for that last 1260 days before the return of Yeshua. The islands that Egypt acceded to Saudi Arabia is just one more tiny step in that direction. Changing alliances and island acquisitions in the Middle East are bringing the world one step closer to the ultimate conflict. Now let's take a look at the bloodbath on both coasts of the United States this week. In what appears to be the start of symptoms of madness from one coast of the United States to the other, a Michigan representative who survived a gun attack during a congressional baseball practice Wednesday morning in Virginia detailed his harrowing moments when the gunman opened fire. A lone gunman who was said to be distraught over President Trump's election opened fire on members of the Republican congressional baseball team at a practice field in this Washington suburb on Wednesday, using a rifle to shower the field with bullets that struck four people, including Steve Scalise, the majority whip of the House of Representatives. The Hill published this report. As many as 30 gunshots can be heard in a recording which was taken from a house not far from the field where GOP lawmakers and aides were practicing. It is unclear how many of the shots were fired by a gunman and how many were fired by police. The footage does not show any video of the shooting. NBC offered this. As many as 22 members of Congress who were at the field at the early morning practice described a terrifying scene with the gunman reloading while standing on the field and the wounded congressman screaming for help. The shooter was James T. Hodgkinson of Belleville, who belonged to a number of anti-Republican groups, including one called Terminate the Republican Party. Hodgkinson advocated for raising taxes on the rich, expressed support for President Obama, and declared his love for the Rachel Maddow Show. And according to BND, Hodgkinson declared in a Facebook post that it's time to destroy Trump and company. According to Grabian, activist and media personality Tariq Nasheed appeared to indicate support for the shooting on Twitter. As of June 15, 2017, Representative Steve Scalise remains in critical condition. The next incident happened in San Francisco at the site of a UPS facility. A shooting at a United Parcel Service facility in San Francisco killed multiple people on Wednesday morning, according to a UPS spokesman. The shooting occurred around 9 a.m. and prompted the San Francisco Police Department to issue a shelter-in-place alert to the neighborhood. The UPS facility is on the border of the Mission District and Potrero Hill neighborhoods. Five people suffered gunshot wounds, including the gunman, whose wound was self-inflicted, according to San Francisco Police Chief William Scott. At least two people were reported dead after the gunman barged into the facility. Steve Gout, a UPS spokesman, said the shooter was a driver and in uniform. All of the workers involved were on the clock and gathering for their morning meeting before heading out with their parcels, he said. Next is the incident at Travis Air Force Base, also on Wednesday. This headline says, Travis Air Force Base lifts lockdown after real-world security incident. Travis Air Force Base lifted a lockdown Wednesday after being under a security alert due to a real-world security incident, the base said in a Facebook post. CBS Sacramento, citing a Travis Air Force spokesperson, reports the active shooter situation started at the base exchange, but later said no shooter was ever found and it was a false alarm. The base is located in Solano County, about 40 miles southwest of San Francisco. Fairfield Police said it didn't respond to the incident and deferred to the base. Now, isn't that interesting? We had the UPS shooting in San Francisco, and then we had this Travis Air Force Base false alarm over a real-world security incident. A reporter from CBS Sacramento posted a video to Twitter where you can apparently hear real world and lockdown being broadcast over loudspeakers. There was a security exercise underway at the base, and somebody took that to be an active shooter, and they went from there, said U.S. Republican John Garamendi, who was briefed on the situation. Now let's take a look at another possible incident on Thursday. Here's the headline. U.S. Coast Guard warns of dirty bomb, clears threat hours later. Authorities evacuated a terminal at the port of Charleston in South Carolina to investigate a potential threat in a container ship, the U.S. Coast Guard said. The all clear was sounded a few hours later after four containers were cleared by authorities. Maersk Line, the world's biggest container ship company, said in a statement Thursday the U.S. Coast Guard had informed it of a threat of a dirty bomb aboard one of its vessels, the Memphis. It is said all crew members were safe and ashore. The Coast Guard said the threat was active and ongoing via Twitter at 2 a.m., but an hour later tweeted that four containers had been scanned and cleared and that the Unified Command determined there was no threat to the port. As the end of Babylon's time on Earth grows near, the people will be frightened of their own shadows. Deuteronomy 28:58 says, if you will not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may fear this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God. And in continuing in Deuteronomy 28:64, the Lord shall scatter you among all the people from the one end of the earth even to the other, and there you shall serve other gods which neither you nor your fathers have known, even wood and stone. And among these nations you shall find no ease, neither shall the sole of your foot have rest. But the Lord will give you there a trembling heart and failing of eyes and sorrow of mind, and your life will hang in doubt before you. And you shall fear day and night, and you shall have no assurance of your life. In the morning you will say, would God it were evening. And at evening you will say, would God it were morning. For the fear of your heart shall you fear, and for the sight of your eyes which you shall see. People who continue to commit crimes against Yahweh's kingdom, who reject the Torah's authority in their lives, and whose desires are for their flesh, will find themselves more afraid as the end draws near. The secular, as well as religious people, can feel the end coming and will react fearfully to events. That is likely some of what happened with the random violence this week, although there may be more to the Port of Charleston dock and Travis Air Force Base accounts. There may be cover-ups going on, but it appears more likely that people were just antsy given what happened in Virginia and San Francisco. There will be more of these kind of events to come. It is time to repent. Remember, our next destination is Jerusalem. Shabbat Shalom.